Hello?
Hey, man. Todd in Vancouver.
Hey. How are you, man?
Not bad. You?
Good.
Right
on. Oh, yeah. Glad we finally got to talk. Sorry, it's been a run around.
Dude, not at all, man. Not at all. I've been looking forward to chatting with you. And sorry, by the way, I had no idea that you weren't in St. Ausonia anymore.
On their, a couple years now?
Yeah, on their page, you're still, like, you're still on their Twitter, you know, picture and stuff and the profile. And I just assumed you still were, so.
You know, with that band, I was always sort of Mike and Adam that sort of, you know, they're kind of the band in that. Me and Corey were kind of, you know, for lack of a better word, hired guns in that.
Right.
Even though it never looked that way in the pictures and stuff. And, you know, we toured for, I think, a couple of years on that. And then, you know, like, there was like 6 months off where Adam was playing acoustically going around. And I just needed some, you know, some time to, you know, to myself. And I'd been touring for 20-some years at that point. And, yeah, so it's all good. They got Sal, who used to be in Stained, and he was actually, it's funny, he was my drum tech on that tour.
Okay.
So Sal's playing with them now. And, yeah, I wish them all the best. It was just time to move on.
That was a killer project. What was it like for the first few jams? I mean, a lot of people talk about super groups and stuff, and just because you're all seasoned and pro players, it does not mean that it's going to be good, but clearly St. Ausonia was. What was it like those first few jams with the boys?
Well, with that, it was me and Adam, actually. I was still in Finger 11 at the time, and the first time we got in contact, I think I contacted when I heard he left 3 Days Grace.
Mm-hmm.
And when I, you know, we were always buddies, but we weren't like, you know, type buddies that, you know, called each other up and hung out or anything. When I finally did get a hold of him, then I was just wondering, you know, if everything was good with him, if he was doing okay. It turned out that we were neighbors actually in Toronto.
Oh.
We lived through, like, we could literally see each other's, into each other's living rooms from each other's condos, like, literally.
Okay.
So we, so we're like, oh shit. So me and him kind of decided to start that. You know, I was coming to an end with Finger 11, and, me and him started that. And at first it was just me and him going out doing shows just under the name Adam Gontier.
Oh.
And then eventually he heard, I think Mike Stain had come through town, and he got together with Mike. And then, you know, there's a lot of times of us talking, and then like 3 months would go by of nothing. And then we'd, you know, he'd get together with me and he'd show me a couple songs on acoustic, and then a few months would go by. And then after one of those, you know, a few months gone by, it was, you know, he had told me that he got together with Mike, and it all just sort of snowballed from there. But we never really got together and jammed. We, you know, we went and met at the studio and basically just started recording the record right away before ever rehearsing or anything. So yeah, it was cool. In that instance, it was almost like I was a session drummer coming in, hearing Mike's riffs and just drumming on top of them. And there were no vocals yet, really. So the album was kind of put together like that, and then we got a bass player at the end of that. You know, we looked around and found Corey, and then the band was sort of complete once the record was done.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so it was, you know, it was a somewhat more of a thrown together thing like that. And like I said, I was just getting to the point in touring where, you know, just I'd gone through a bunch of personal stuff, and I wasn't really feeling myself and wasn't feeling as healthy as I could be. And I just needed some time to sort of get back to me, you know?
Right.
So it was awesome. It was like a couple of years of touring the world with them.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm sort of, I've got a few things going on again that I've got another group of guys actually from some successful bands, that we're starting to, you know, we're writing right now. And I don't know if I can say who it is.
Are you let the cat out of the bag, or?
Yeah, it's still under wraps, but it's all guys you'll know for sure.
Okay.
Every single guy in the band's from another band. Mm. One of them is actually from Vancouver, the bass player. So, you'll know soon enough, very soon. I can't talk about it just yet, but.
Yeah.
Then I got a few, I've been playing with some different country bands in the last year. So I've just been slowly getting back into playing where, you know, for me, I just needed just some time off and just to be re-inspired again.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the road after 20-some years on the road, they'll just burn you out and you lose focus on what's important, you know, and you develop a lot of bad habits and I just did all of that, and you know, I just needed to stop and just come home and recalibrate, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, fair enough. So, Rich, let's go back before you were in bands, and I want to hear about the music that was in your house as a kid growing up. What are your parents playing when you're?
I was born in Wales, in Great Britain, okay. And I moved over to Canada when I was three. So everything in my house, it was all Beatles and Elvis Presley, you know, the Animals, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then when I was, you know, when I was really young, when Michael Jackson's Thriller came out, that was massive in my house, and massive to me. I mean, I was a Michael Jackson fanatic for years, and still am.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so it was really, when I was really, it was funny, because it took a while for me to really get into the Beatles and Elvis, because when, you know, whenever you're young and whatever your parents are listening to, you don't
that's not
really
great stuff.
Appreciate it as much, right?
Right, of course.
So yeah, later I sort of went back and rediscovered the Beatles. But for me, as a kid, you know, the first thing, I think it really got me into music and drumming and just, you know, songs, it was Michael Jackson.
Interesting.
Yeah, I love that Thriller record.
Yeah, and of course, you know, we've got to be around the same age. I'm 44.
Yeah, I'm 42.
Okay, yeah. So remember when those videos came out, and like the Thriller video, the long form was this mind-blowing, mind-melting.
Oh, yeah, we went out and bought it on Betamax. You know, what was that? We had a data machine. Right? And awesome. We went and watched it. Yeah, it was, like, terrifying. I mean, that dance sequence in Thriller is still the best, like, choreography I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Still today, it stands the test. What was your first concert?
My first concert was, I'm just trying to remember his name. It's not Rick Springfield. It's Rick. What's the other Rick?
Rick James? I'm Rick James, bitch.
Yeah. Yeah, no, not him. Maybe it was Rick Springfield. Gosh.
What, Jesse?
I know
Spiro?
One of them was. No, I made that years ago. It wasn't Rick Springfield, because years ago I said that, and then I remember that was Jesse's Girl, and it wasn't him. It was. But let's say this. I know my second one. That was Gowan.
Oh.
Strange Animal Tour.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. And which was awesome, and I love Gowan. I still love Criminal Mind and stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, I wish I could remember the first guy, Rick. It'll come to me.
Maybe it'll ring a bell. Yeah. How old were you when you were in your first band?
I was in grade 7 when I met this girl in my class. So how old are you in grade 7? Like 12 or something?
12, yeah.
This girl in my class, brother, was in, I think, grade 10 at the time, which was crazy. You know, that was like, wow, high school. And, I knew every single Metallica song. I was a Metallica freak, and him and these two guitar players came over, and it was the first time, I think the first song I ever played with the band was For Whom the Bells Toll, Metallica.
Yeah.
And it was just the first time I heard a guy like soloing and actually knowing all of Kirk Hammett's parts. It was awesome. And so this first band I was in, we were called Alliance.
Okay.
And we just did, yeah, Metallica, and then we did like Skid Row and
nice.
Oh yeah, Saigon Kick and Extreme. Wow. Sort of all of them have, even some Slayer. So.
Yeah.
And then that was the first band I started writing in as well.
Right.
And I was in that band all through high school. It's funny because those guys, because they were a few years older, they graduated. When I got into high school, they were done high school.
Oh.
Like once I got into grade 9, they were graduated. So I was in a band, you know, from grade 9 on, I was going to rehearsals every night, like, you know, 6-7 days a week, writing songs, and so I kind of missed the whole high school party, you know, going to parties, and so I was jamming, like, with these older guys at the time, and all to help end on getting a record deal, and I started playing strip clubs when I was, like, in grade 9 or 10, where my parents would have to chaperone me and come with me and set up my kid on the stage, you know, because there'd be girls dancing naked throughout the club. Yeah, so pretty wild.
Okay, so basically your whole life, man. You've been playing your whole life.
Yeah, I've been definitely playing my whole life. And, you know, I got right out of high school. I joined a cover band that quickly became like a touring cover band. So we were playing like, you know, I think 6 nights a week, every week for 5 years, I think. Just constantly,
wow,
you know, going to these little towns in Ontario and where you'd stay above the place. You know, there'd just be one room, and the whole band would stay, and all these cowboys would want to kick the shit out of you, you know, because their girlfriends were talking to you. You know, it was just nightly. Wow. And then eventually, through that bar band, someone told me that the Rainbow Butt Monkeys were looking for a drummer.
Right.
So I went, you know, I can't remember how I found their manager's number, but I found it and was able to get an audition, but I didn't realize they'd already changed their name to Finger 11 and had recorded a record that had come out. So I went and learned the whole Rainbow Butt Monkeys record.
The letters to Chutney.
Yeah, that was for Chutney, yeah. And then when I got there, I think I'd heard a few new songs. I think like that day I heard Quicksand or something from the Finger 11 record.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got to the audition and was like, oh, sorry, guys, I learned the whole last record. And they were like, yeah, we're not doing any of those songs anymore. We got a whole new record. So I had to quickly learn that. And, the rest was history. Luckily, I got in the band, which was cool because I got to kind of experience the whole, you know, at that time they just got dropped. So I was able to join a band and realize, you know, get the experience record companies taking you out for dinner and sort of smoozing you and trying to get you to sign.
Yeah.
So we got a lot of interest, you know, about five or six labels in the States. So eventually we signed to a label from New York, and that was the start of, you know, five or six records, I think, touring with them.
Yeah. I mean, you were with them almost 15 years.
No, I think it was like 20 years.
Oh, 20 years. Holy crap.
Yeah.
Like, you could argue that Finger 11 is one of the most successful Canadian rock bands of all time.
Crazy to hear you say that. I never think of them like that, but it was definitely very successful for a minute there when One Thing and Paralyzer came out.
Dude, those songs were massive. Like working as a jock on a rock station in Vancouver, those songs were fucking huge, dude.
Yeah.
Like, huge songs.
I think I remember even once in a dentist office hearing like a musical version of One Thing, you know, like how they have like the elevator music. Kind of thing.
You know, you've made it when.
Yeah. So yeah, that was a great time. And you know, we were just a band of brothers, you know, I love those guys so much and I miss them.
Yeah.
Who knows down the road, I'd love to, you know, play some shows with them again. We have so many great memories. I mean, when I think of my history, St. Asonia was, you know, I'm super proud of it. It was a small chunk of it, but really for me, it was my brothers and Finger 11 and everything we accomplished. You know, I'm so proud of it and just absolutely love those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. Are you a big fan of the rock documentaries? Have you checked out that Eagles, on Netflix? Dude,
I have. Yeah. Amazing, sure have.
Right? Like how good was that? And think of the time when they were recording those, you know, the concerts, and they've got the board feed, and they're backstage, they're in limos. Think of the size of those freaking cameras, man, at that point in, like, late 70s. They would have been, like, 50 pounds.
Yeah, totally. It's amazing. Yeah, it's just the music those guys created. And also, you know, it shows what publishing can do and what breaks up bands and what kills bands. When I think the Eagles were, I think it said in that documentary, they were cutting up publishing like for every bar, so basically every four beats they were fighting over, you know, so like 1, 2, 3, 4 right there, that part of a song they were having like lawyers involved. They, you know, when that 4 seconds of Hotel California could mean a difference of millions of dollars, I guess it sort of changes your tune. But it's too bad that seems like since the start of time, you know, like publishing has been a destroyer of great bands and greed, you know, and money.
Right, right.
But I suppose if you wrote something and, you know, and your bass player and your drummer didn't write it, I guess it's, you can see why fights happen to not share that, but it's just too bad, you know, because what they did create together in a room was timeless music, you know, such a great band.
Yeah, absolutely. And how about the Ginger Baker documentary? Being a drummer.
Oh yeah, I've seen that. Yeah. Wow. Oh, he's a maniac.
Wow, like
crazy guy.
Yeah, never would have thought that. You know, from just hearing the music, I don't know.
I know, and I didn't know much about him until I saw that. You know, it's amazing just him driving around Africa, high on drugs, and a wild guy, man, and still kicking.
Yeah, and do you read many of the autobiographies?
I used to. It's funny, in this new age of, you know, audiobooks and stuff, I haven't read anything, but I used to read I think, you know, like the guy that wrote the Dirt, the Motley Crue one, he also, I think, did the Marilyn Manson one and the Jenna Jameson one, the porn star. There was this author that did all those, and he just had a great, really entertaining way of writing.
Just a, page turner for sure.
Yeah. So I think Slash had one. So all those guys, you know, are, you're not always rockers. Like anyone sort of in the media that you'd see that you know of, I used to always kind of read their book. Even like Scott Stapp, that one from Creed. And because I used to tour with him and be label mates with him and good friends with him, I was really interested to hear his story. Yeah, but since, you know, last time I bought a book, I don't know. Nowadays, I'm all about podcasts.
Oh, God.
All I listen to.
Oh, this is good.
And here I am.
Yeah, no doubt. And thank you again.
Of course.
Yeah, the Motley Crue, do you think that the movie that they're, because I think it's coming out in May, April or May or something like that. Do you think that it'll even come close to what the book was?
I don't know. I saw some clips from it on YouTube.
You have?
I don't know. Oh. Yeah, if you look it up now, I think it's just some snapshots of the cast. I mean, they look great. Machine Gun Kelly's playing Tommy Lee.
Playing Tommy, yeah, I saw that.
And, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what to think. That book was so entertaining. The fact that it's coming to Netflix, the thing with Netflix, it's so awesome, but I'll watch something or binge watch something, a series, so quick, and then it's sort of gone off my radar so fast where there's a theatrical release, it seems to stick with people longer. So I hope it's a big hit for them, but it'll be interesting to see if they capture all the naughty stuff and crazy stuff they got into.
Right, because at that point, it almost needs to be like an X-rated.
At
least, you know.
Yeah. And that was awesome touring. You know, I got to tour with them, their final tour. They did their very last show at the Staples Center in Los Angeles. But before that, I was with them all through Europe. You know, so I played their second last show or their third last show. And, you know, for about 3 weeks, I was with them and Alice Cooper. So that was amazing to be, you know, touring with such legends for their final, you know, for their final few shows.
Yeah, I mean, and, Motley, for me, that was the band that grabbed me. I have a star on my hand because of Tommy Lee. I drum because of Tommy Lee, like.
Nice.
You know? So, yeah, that's crazy.
They're all great guys, too, on that tour. Tommy was great. Nicky was really great. And surprisingly, the guy I ended up really bonding with on that tour was Mick Mars. He, the first day of the tour, he invited me into his dressing room, and he kind of knew about me through their old singer, John Corabi, that they had for that one record.
Right. I actually had John on as a guest. He's a great guy.
Awesome guy. Yeah. I love that record.
Yeah. Probably the best musical record.
Definitely best sounding too. I mean, the drums on that are like massive.
Monster. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But yeah, Mick was really nice. And he was talking to me about possibly playing on his solo record. And I couldn't believe, because he never really knew much about Mick throughout. He was just kind of the dark guy and quiet guy. But
totally,
he was such a nice guy. I mean, all of them, Nick, he was amazing. Vince was sort of kept to himself. But I don't know if I even cared too much to, you know, about that guy. He never seemed the most welcoming of guys, you know. Like,
right.
He was just sort of a hey as he walked down the hallway. But the rest of the guys were super cool, and I watched him every single night, as well as Alice Cooper. It was an amazing tour.
Yeah, for sure.
I was really super pumped I was on that.
Yeah. You'd mentioned Netflix. We're talking about, you know, what are you binging right now? What are the shows you can't get enough of?
Well, it's funny, because when I'm not, now I'm living down here in Michigan, but when I've, over the years, whenever I've been home in Toronto, I've worked on movie sets as like another income. And there's a show coming out that I just worked on for about 5 months that's coming out next month called The Umbrella Academy.
Okay.
And I'm really pumped to actually see that, just to you know, be on the set every day watching it get made. But it's with the girl from Juno, Ellen Page.
Okay, yeah.
And Mary J. Blige is in it. And it was a graphic novel that Gerard from My Chemical Romance had written, and I guess became very successful in the comic book world, and Netflix bought it. So, and then they made the series. So that comes out next month. I'm pumped to see that.
Wow. That's crazy. But Gerard Way, man, that guy is like so talented.
Mm-hmm. And this, I think it's going to be really cool. You can actually, there's a little trailer on YouTube for that now as well, for the Umbrella Academy. But
okay.
So the thing I'm watching right now, binge watching, to answer your question, is Shameless.
Shameless.
Yeah.
I've never even heard of it.
It's William H. Macy. No, is that his name, William H. Macy? Yeah, William H. Macy. It's kind of like a Chicago, you know, alcoholic, drug-riddled family. They're on season 7 right now or something.
Okay.
But it's great. Yeah, it's just...
Yeah, he's an awesome actor. You know,
yeah, he's an awesome actor. What else have I been watching? I watch a lot of Netflix. Well, Orange is the New Black. Me and my wife were watching, enjoying that.
Good show. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, anything on World War II, if it's on, I'll watch it.
Okay.
I'm just a junkie for, you know, especially when they put color to it.
Right.
I can watch that all day.
Right. Right. You'd mentioned a graphic novel with Gerard Way there. Have you seen, are you a fan of like the superhero stuff? Have you seen The Watchmen? That has to be the best adaptation from a graphic novel, I think.
Yeah, absolutely killer. I mean, I didn't know the graphic novel because I don't follow them too much, but that movie is just beautiful. It's
insane.
And I did go back and see the graphic novel and after the fact, and they nailed that.
Right.
I mean, incredible.
And knowing the graphic novel as well as I do, I mean, it was, what they did was magic. It was straight up, like, you never would have thought, because that graphic novel written by Alan Moore, probably one of the best writers, you know, of our time.
Right.
It was so good.
And who's that? What's his name or her name?
Alan Moore is the guy that wrote Watchmen.
Okay.
And does a ton of stuff, Sandman. And I mean, he's a really good writer, but you never would have thought they'd be able to translate that graphic novel into such an awesome movie. Kind of the same regard as the Motley Crue thing.
And what about Sin City seemed? I mean,
yes.
I love that. But,
oh,
yeah,
dude.
That looked like it was on point, too.
So good. I was Jessica Alba, Bruce Willis.
Mickey Rourke.
Mickey Rourke, yeah. That was another great one.
The second one, I just had a hard time diving into the second one as much. I don't know why, but the first one blew my mind when I saw it.
I think I've even seen the second one.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool, and it just seems, I don't know, just, there's not as special as the first one.
Yeah, I mean, the first one was so amazing. If you could have a superpower, which superpower would you want to have?
Oh, it would have to be flight, I guess.
Tough to get away from that, right? It's like right
away. How do you beat that one?
Flying would be so amazing. I mean, of course, it's got to be bullet speed, too. Like, boom, you're suddenly just in Australia, and your clothes didn't burn off your body at that speed. Amazing.
It'd be funny if you got that, you know, you got that superpower, didn't tell you can only go like 5 miles an hour. They didn't put, that was in like the small lettering at the bottom.
Small
of the
italic print at the bottom.
Yeah.
You can fly, but
you can kind of putter along.
You could ride a bike faster, but you can fly. Yeah. Do you think that aliens have visited Earth?
I do. I'm a crazy alien guy. I've got quite a few, you know, gray tattoos on me of gray aliens. Since I was young, I've been a freak about, I don't know how into it you are, but there's a guy, Billy Meyer in Switzerland, that had a crazy footage of you know, some UFOs out of his side of his house that, you know, it proclaimed that he had contact with them, and these, you know, aliens called Palladians. Mm-hmm. And I got right into it for years. I do. I mean, I don't know, but it almost seems like there is quite a bit of, you know, evidence of not necessarily aliens, but things that can't be explained. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that movie, Sirius, that's out?
No.
That's on Netflix? That's one to check out, man. It seems like there's a lot of, you know, high up guys, military guys, or just government officials that have come out and said they've either worked on projects or know of things. But I mean, you never really know what you're hearing, whether it's facts. That's a rabbit hole subject where you can go down it pretty deep.
Oh yeah.
I'm into it.
Yeah, same.
But I'm into all that stuff. It's fascinating. Bigfoot stuff. Les Stroud, that Survivor Man guy.
Yeah.
He's a great. good buddy of mine.
No way, is he really?
And he tells me crazy things. And, you know, when that guy tells you, look, dude, these things are real. Like, there are Sasquatch. When he tells you, and he's like, I've seen them with my own eyes, and I know the guy well enough to know he's either lost his mind, or he was seeing things because he was out there surviving for too many days, or he's telling the truth. So, yeah, that fascinates me, you know, all that stuff. But I keep it at a safe distance, too, because all that rabbit hole stuff, you talk about it too much, you sound wacky, you know. But I could sit down over a coffee with people and go down that rabbit hole if they want to for hours. But in interviews, you know, I probably have to restrict it because I'll sound too crazy.
Mm-hmm. Well, dude, I honestly believe that aliens live among us.
Yeah, you can read all kinds of stuff with people, you know, talking about that for sure. Some looking some looking like us or living below us, or who knows. Mm-hmm.
Down that rabbit hole with Rich.
easy to do.
Couple more questions, and dude, thank you again for doing this. I'll hit you with an oddball, and then the toughest one I'll ask.
Okay.
Have you ever had a near death experience?
Yeah, I rolled a car once.
Oh.
That was probably a near death experience. Even though I was okay, but it could have been in a car accident.
Yeah.
I think that's the only kind of near-death experience I've had. I've probably done things in my days being drunk that were probably near-death experiences I don't remember.
Of course.
Sure.
Of course, yes.
But, yeah, nothing that jumps out.
Right.
Besides the rolling a car down the side of a road.
Yeah, which, of course, I mean, people die from that shit, man.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Last question, hardest question. What is your career highlight?
My career highlight was, I'd say, playing in Afghanistan for the troops.
Right.
That was probably worth the most for me. Just, you know, I got the most out of it. I was so proud to be there. I got to actually see, and it was Canadian, American, Australian, French, British, New Zealand. And we got to meet troops from all around the world. It was, I probably think about that at least once a day, every day. I just kind of,
wow,
you know, that just goes through my head that I was able to go over there and do that. And that meant a lot, you know.
Yeah, you know, I had James Black as a guest, and he actually said the same thing. And I've known James for a while.
We were there together.
Yeah, of course. And but he shared the trip over there. Apparently, it was a bit of a dicey airplane ride, and you guys didn't know that it was going to be like, you know, towards the tail end getting into Afghanistan. You know, somebody had said like, okay, look, you know, we're going to be kind of going under the radar kind of thing. And
We did that. It's called a tactical landing, they call it.
Okay.
Yeah, where they drop out of the sky because there's guys trying to fire rockets and planes landing there.
Right, what the fuck? And you don't know about this until you get there. Like, okay.
Yeah. Then. Well, they did warn us, though. So I don't know if you remember that. They warned us because they got to warn you. I mean, you got to strap in. All the lights go out. And you know when you see in movies when guys are going to jump out of planes and there's just that red...
Yeah.
You know, whatever kind of like police light going.
Yeah.
There's just that going in this huge plane that tanks can drive into. I don't know if they're called Hurricanes or this massive plane we're in. And, you know, that goes on and it all goes dark and just that red light goes on. And then you kind of drop out of the sky where if you weren't belted in, you would probably hit the roof of the plane. And then all of a sudden, bang, you know, you just feel the plane land and you're like, what the hell? We were just, you know, 35,000 feet in the air.
Wow.
And you know what was crazier was after that happened, from the moment we landed, the plane opened up and these guys with machine guns came in and they were like, welcome to Afghanistan, please follow me. It was like from that moment the guy yelled that at me, I was just like, holy cow, like on high alert the whole trip. You know, I was like, I've never been yelled at a dude, welcome to Afghanistan, follow me before.
Right.
You know, and I never will again. You were just like, you know, like high from adrenaline from the moment you landed, from the landing to the soldiers, you know, getting you out of the plane and yelling at you. And only yelling, you know, they were the most friendliest people in the world, but just yelling because the plane was loud and you were on an airstrip.
Wow.
But it was awesome. Yeah, it was the most rewarding. That just to be asked was, I was more honored than I've ever been. You know, and I just had more loyalty and patriotism to, you know, coming home to all these people, you know, risking their lives every day. So we're over there playing rock and roll music for them, and, you know, they're going out and getting shot at.
Right.
Pretty wild.
Kind of hard not to be the career highlight at that point.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, dude, thank you for taking the time again today, Rich, for joining us here in Vancouver. Where are you most active online? Like, where can people kind of keep up with you on social media?
My Instagram is what I probably put stuff on the most.
Okay.
Which is just Rich Beto, and then my Facebook as well. I have a website that's, I think it's not up and running at the moment. Oh, it is, yeah, so richbeto.com. You know, and from there, if people want to do lessons or, you know, any kind of recording sessions or anything, they can get a hold of me there as well. And then I'll be announcing this new project I'm doing soon, so everyone stay tuned for that. It'll be it's a bunch of guys everyone will recognize, and... there's going to be some new music coming this year.
Very cool. Very, very cool. All right, man. Well, I guess we'll see you online.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.